Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros on bbsradio.com. And tonight we are back with all new original programming, and I have a very special guest tonight for the full hour. I have Miss Candida Royal, founder and director of Femme Productions, someone who I've been longing to talk to for an extended period of time, for a long time, and finally I have her on the show tonight. And I just want to say welcome, Candida, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I have to say you have quite the sexy radio voice.
Oh, thank you.
I'm happy to be here for a full hour at least.
Oh, yes. Well, listen, anytime you need a voiceover for one of your films, I'm up for it.
Okay, I'll remember that.
So tonight what I'd like to do is just sort of do a retrospective, look at all of your career, starting with the beginnings of Femme and the reasons why you created it, and looking back at your days as a performer.
Okay.
So basically, now Femme was started in 1980.
Actually, I started Femme in 1984.
Okay.
My last performance in front of the camera was in 1980.
Oh, cool. Okay. So then you would technically you would fall into that category of having been in the golden age. Or what's known as the golden age.
Yes, I would. Yes, indeed.
And you were at that time, you were living in San Francisco.
Right, exactly.
What was that like?
Well, I got into movies really on a kind of a fluke. It was the mid-70s, and I'm originally from New York, and I came to San Francisco in about 1972 after spending a bit of time in college, art college, and then regular college, majoring in psychology. And I lost interest. And most of all, I really was tired of being in New York. I needed to get out of here, and I had been briefly in San Francisco and gotten a taste of how wonderful and exciting it was becoming there, and knew that I wanted to come back. So I did, and I got involved in the wonderful, creative, alternative, wacky, wild scene in San Francisco. And at that time, it was really quite something. And, in those days, I was certainly in the progressive social movement where we didn't care so much about material things and we wanted to do things for the love of it. So I was doing my art, and I was performing in avant-garde theater. I was performing with some of the original infamous Coquettes. The Coquettes, and I was singing in jazz clubs. But I was, I didn't have much money because, as I said, we didn't really do things for money back then. And it was very political in a way. So, but I needed some money, and I answered an ad for nude modeling because I had grown up and, drew from nude models in school and everything. And actually, I was quite shy about being naked, which a lot of people find surprising. But I answered this ad, and the agent asked me during the course of the interview if I had any interest in performing in an adult movie or a porn movie, and I was shocked. I had never even seen one, and I sort of stormed off. But my boyfriend at the time, who was a musician, thought that sounded like a great idea, and so he decided to try it out. And also a very close friend of mine who went on to be known as Lorian Dominique. And
yes.
A lovely, lovely young woman who left us all too soon. But so he decided to try it out, and I wasn't so sure if I was so happy about that, but I decided to go through him. I got to see what it was really like. I mean, I think that, like so many people, I had the preconceived notion that oh, this must be just a terrible environment, you know, with drug-addled people needing money for their next fix in some grimy motel room, you know. And he actually got a starring role right away in a big production by Anthony, a much beloved director named Anthony Spinelli, in this big, syrupy, sweet movie called Cry for Cindy. And he was very handsome. He was really cute. And I went to the set to see what it was like, and I really had my head turned around. I was surprised. I mean, it was a big production. It was the cast was very attractive. Good, you know, big crew, scripts. There were, you know, quite extensive interviews and auditions to get into these bigger budget movies. And I was very impressed, and I thought, wow, this isn't so bad. I think I'm going to try this. And that's how I got into it. And I really, you know, for me, it was a way to earn extra money. And plus, I liked performing. I always was a ham and a performer. And, you know, in those days, I think if you chose, which is probably the case now, but if you chose your projects carefully and the people who you worked for, it could be a very fun experience. I always enjoyed the people I worked with. I made very close friends that have been very lasting. I'm still very close to a lot of those people from those days. I ended up, when I came back to New York for my last year of performing, I met the man who would become my husband for 8 years through the industry, a very talented young producer. And you know, there were definitely, I had some experiences that were less than stellar. You know, not everyone was Anthony Spinelli or some of the better directors. And sometimes, you know, I found myself on the set of someone who I realized had no regard, no respect for the performers who were working for him or her. And that made it an unpleasant experience. You know, it for me, it made me feel cheap and like I was doing something bad, and which is not difficult to feel because, you know, especially in those days, it really was still looked upon as quite taboo and not a respectable way to earn a living, for sure, especially for women. So, you know, you had to be careful to not end up working for someone sleazy. And then, of course, there were a couple of directors, some of whom were actually, one was the husband of a well-known female director who will remain nameless, but who, you know, they'll try to get you to put out for them, you know, just for the hope of getting a role. And I was never stupid enough to fall for that. I mean, my God, I'm getting paid to perform. Why should I give it away for free?
Right.
You know, are you kidding? This isn't Hollywood, honey, you know. And but for the most part, it really was a fun experience. I would say my most fun experience was working for Bob Chin was the director. And
Right.
Yeah.
Bob Chin, Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls.
Well, Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls. It was the silliest movie, but John Holmes was, of course, the big star in that, and Desiree Cousteau and Christine DeShaffer and my beloved friend Lorian Dominique. And what was so fun is that we were all put up in the motel together up in Berkeley. I was actually living in L.A. by then. And we had to learn how to ride skateboards because the girls would deliver pizzas on their skateboards. So we would take our skateboards out after shooting for a day and practice in the parking lot together. And we just had so much fun. I got quite good at skateboarding. And it was just a silly good time. And Richard Aldrich, he was the other one I was thinking about. He was one of the writers and worked with Bob all the time. Just a real doll to work for. Both of them were. And the funny thing is that I actually still have. We all had to wear the same little short shorts, and they had these little tops made for us that had our names on them. Mine in the movie was Gino. And I still have my outfits, and I'm actually going to start an eBay site or something where I sell that kind of stuff, and I have the exact shorts from Pizza Girls and the little top I wore. It's in perfect condition, still fits me. And you know, so it was a fun experience. That was a really fun experience.
Well, of course, in talking about that, you mentioned the name John Holmes, and you can't really talk about the Golden Age without mentioning John Holmes.
Sure.
There seems to have been, in the last couple of years, a sort of renaissance in appreciation for him. The new book is out about him. There have been several documentaries. Looking at him objectively, here's a man who came from very humble origins and became, at least for a short period of time, like, I guess you can't say he was the number one sex symbol in the world, but surely everybody knew, when you said the name John Holmes, everybody knew who John Holmes was. And yet,
yes, truly a household name.
Yeah, truly. I mean, there's that clip of that film that's on YouTube right now from the film Exhausted. And they go, "Do you know who John Holmes is?" John Holmes?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. You know, and the one guy says, "John Holmes? Yeah, sure. That's like knowing who Kirk Douglas or John Wayne is." You know?
Yeah, exactly. And that clip is with my who was also a dear friend at the time, Leslie Beauvais.
Yes. Yeah, she was amazing. There were so many who were like incredible performers at that time.
Very individualistic. Yeah, very individualistic.
Yeah.
A lot of personality, smart, talented performers at that time, because you could really all be different. You could be yourself. You didn't have to be cookie cutter.
Yes. And I remember, of course, her from the film she made with John. I think they have it was like a version of Double Indemnity.
And
it was also directed by Bob Chin in Hawaii on location. This was a real movie. I mean, this wasn't like a little 1 hour job, and it was
those were real productions.
Yeah. Especially like the ones that Spinelli did. I remember seeing an interview with Richard Pachenko and Ina Hartley years ago on Midnight Blue, and he was talking about, you know, the films I did for Pachenko, we rehearsed for 2 weeks, and you can see poor Nina, she's like shaking at you, rehearsed for 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because a lot of these people were from the filmmaking world. And they didn't just decide, oh, wow, I can now pick up a camera, go buy a camera for a few hundred bucks and, you know, pay a couple of people to come into this hotel room and do something. I mean, I'm not saying that they were marvelous filmmakers, but they came from the real film world with, they had skills, they were knowledgeable about how to shoot.
Yes.
You know, Bob Chin was really a filmmaker, as were people like Henri Bouchard, also known as Ron Sullivan, who actually was one of the producers of Putney Swope years ago, and Chuck Vinson, who was from the theater world. I mean, these were, you know, they came from the film world. They didn't just
Damiano.
The camera. Damiano, you know, I mean, these were really, you know, they had... The fun thing about working for directors like this is that they had vision. I have to mention also Anne Perry Rhine, who was one of the early women directors, who really, I did a silly film called Ball Game for her, but I really like my scene in it, because when I looked at it years and years later, I realized that she really, you can see hints of the kind of director I became, because she really let me be myself. I was very sensual in this scene. I'd forgotten this. And it's really in the midst of a silly little porno film about girls in prison who play baseball. You know, here was this scene I did that was very sensual and loving. So I have to mention her in there, too.
And, of course, another one would be Roberta Findlay.
Oh, yes, yes. Roberta Findlay was a legend. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Howard Winters. That's, you know, the thing about the Internet, you know, all the real names are out there now, so you can't
really
hide them.
I know, that is his real name, and I'm thinking, what is his state? What was
Cecil
his name?
Cecil Howard.
Cecil Howard.
Yes.
Did very nice.
The Man
of
Vision. Oh, yes. His was like, you know, made. Those were, you know, I would say.
And Bradley Metzger, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Well, he's like my idol. I mean, I always thought that, you know, If I would have one critique of the industry, I would say, you know what, you should have, if they had just followed his vision, I don't think there would have been any problems, you know, because he was just like so, you know, he's back, you know, he's directing again.
I heard that, yeah, I'd be very curious. Is he directing adult or?
He's directing a short, erotic film. I don't believe it's necessarily hardcore explicit, but it is erotic. It is erotica.
Yeah.
But he is back, and, you know, it's like, I'm so happy to see that, because I just thought that he was just an amazing director. The things that he did, both as under his own name and also as Henry Paris when he was directing Adult. That's like just amazing. But where do you think John Holmes went wrong?
Well, where did he go wrong? I mean, that's a very difficult question to try and
answer. I mean, you could just say the drug addiction, but
Addiction comes from somewhere. You know, you don't start out that the drug addiction is just part of a something that comes from all, you know, some kind of agony or angst or I do believe that probably he may have already had some personality problems, you know, mental difficulties. But I think also that it's very, very difficult to be a man and make your living. I mean, you know, there's this whole sort of thing about, oh, he was a man who had all these women and he had the biggest penis in the world.
Yes.
And, oh, wow, you know. But let me tell you something. Back in those days, and I guess it probably still happens to a degree, the to be a man on the film set who makes their living through having sex, and that's it, who makes their living and is notorious because he has the biggest penis in the world.
Right.
You know, there's still a sort of, you'll always feel a slight condescension from the crew.
Yes.
The crew, really, it's very, very subtle, but it's there. And I witnessed it, I felt it, I'm very sensitive, I saw it. John really threw his weight around on the set. He was a real prima donna. But I think part of it was an act of defensiveness and self-protection and preservation. Because even if he was supposedly this big hero, there was always this slight feeling of, you know, oh, these guys, from the other guys. And maybe they were just, maybe it was their own defensiveness, but there was just always this feeling of like, look at this guy. He's making a living just by screwing around. And you know, so I think there was a lot of pain. And you get stuck in that place. Where was he going to go from there? Where could he make such money? And I think it's a scary place to get to.
Right, I think that I can see that's where, let's say, the advantage of someone, let's say, like John Leslie, who was so multi-talented and went from performing to directing and also returned to music.
Listen, John Leslie is about as opposite of John Holmes as you can get, and I knew them both. I was closer to John Leslie, actually. He was a very nice man. He actually kind of took me under his wing when I first got into the business, and we had a tiny bit of a relationship. But really, we were mostly friends, and he was just such a lovely person and had his head on completely straight. I never knew him to do bad drugs or any drugs. I can't remember any. And he just had a good attitude about who he was. And it's funny because I don't remember attitude from the crew toward him. So, you know, we really bring onto ourselves, I think, that which we already think of ourselves. you know, not to get too philosophical here, but I just think John Leslie never had a problem with who he was. It wasn't the end of the road for him. And so
Right. Everyone
kind of treated him with respect. And yeah, he was, you know, when I'm asked which adult movies I really like, there really are very, very, very few I could ever think of, because I find most of them painfully boring and, for a while there, I was actually doing a review of what was on the marketplace for a big sexuality organization that I'm a member of, ASECT, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And I would do this review with my friend, Dr. Patty Britton, a sexologist. And it was so that the other sexologists could know what was on the market and what they might be able to incorporate into their work with people. And so we would review about 10 movies from various different types, genres of adult movie. And this was, you know, about 10 years ago. And one year really stood out for me, and they remain two of my all-time favorites. One was the original Dinner Party by Cameron Grant,
yes.
The original, though, not
right.
any of the follow-ups. And the other was John Leslie's Dog Walker.
Mm.
And that movie was really a piece of art.
Yes.
You know it, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That
yeah.
was with... Steve St. Croix,
right.
And also, unfortunately, I have to say, the late John Doe was in that also.
That's right. There were a couple people that were late. The woman who was really, what was her name? She was very, very hot. She was the lover of, what's his name?
John Stagliano.
Yes, his lover. Do you remember her name? She was killed in a...
I think it was Christy Lynn.
Was it Christy Lynn? She was killed in a terrible car crash. She
right.
Was in
she
that.
She was drunk and she drove John's car off a cliff.
Oh God, she was in that. So three people now that are gone from that movie, and then there was that incredible hot scene. I think I was just going to say that the scene that really stood out was that scene between that pixie-ish, adorable blonde woman who basically makes love through a glass window to that very handsome, who was that actor? He was a African-American black actor. I can't remember what his name was, but it was the sexiest scene, and it was done through a plate of glass, and it was just great. It was great. Are you looking it up? I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm looking to check that out. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I definitely do remember it. I know it was Steve St. Croix was the lead. John Doe, Iris Niall was in it also. She was kind of big for a while.
And it was this black actor was very big for a while too. He was very. It was just a sexiest scene.
Not Ray Victory.
I don't think so.
Well, I have it here. Let's see. It'll come up. I'll get it up. Okay, let's see.
Come on, get it up there, Stephen.
Oh, is that the director talking?
Yeah.
That's funny. You know, I heard a story that... about Jenna Jameson, she said, as a woman, she feels insulted if a man, her co-star, is taking Viagra. But as a director, producer, okay, I'm paying for this. Let's get it on.
Exactly. You know, because I did most of my directing from 80 to, well, I mean, I've been directing all along, but we didn't have Viagra, and I'm probably one of the only... directors who has a completely different attitude about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm one of the few directors who will give a new guy a chance.
Yes.
And will not, and I don't make it so harrowing for them, because I treat it just like in an intimate setting. If you make the guy feel like it's this life and death situation, of course, who wouldn't have a problem? So
Sure. What
I say to them is, look, just, you know, this is the kind of scene I'm looking for. This is what I'd love to see. And if you have a problem, don't worry about it. Just do what you would do if you had a problem in your own private situation. You know, do other things. Just do other things. And it takes so much pressure off of them. And there have been a couple of times where the guy really ultimately just couldn't, you know, he was new at it. He thought he could do it. All guys think it must be so easy, just go in and have great sex. And but they ultimately couldn't get it up, and which I think is perfectly normal when you have a huge crew standing around staring at you. But it didn't ruin the scene. It just turned into a really hot scene where they had touching and kissing and licking and oral sex and all kinds of, you know, man can learn to use his hands and use things. And,
absolutely.
You know, and that's it. You know, and,
well, that's
in fact,
what I love about yourselves. That's what I love about them, the fact that, you know, you bring such a different dimension. My favorite one for the longest time was Urban Heat.
That's so funny because that I was just going to tell a story about that in this context. Now this is great because I want to ask you, Urban Heat was only our second femme movie. We shot that in 1984 in New York City. And it's kind of, as you remember, it's a thematic piece that basically follows people around very voyeuristically during a heat wave in New York. And we, like I said, we shot it in August and it really was hot. And do you remember the scene with Chelsea Blake?
Yes.
Okay, well, that she was one of my favorite performers. She was an amazing woman who was in her early 40s. She had an all-natural body. She was in great shape. She was the epitome of a woman who just was so comfortable with herself, and it was a great role model for women. In fact, it was used in a major study that was written up in the New York Times Science section about where they did a study on women's response to male porn versus female erotica, and they used that scene because she was such a great role model for women. But in that scene, she seduces a young man in a freight elevator. And this guy was so hot to work with her. Now, did you notice that you never really saw him get hard?
No, I didn't. I did not know that. I knew that later on, but while I was watching it, I did not know that.
Exactly. Because
it didn't matter
because the scene is so hot. It's so off the charts. And it was because they really had a great time anyway. And he went down on her. I think she had probably two orgasms while shooting that scene.
Wow.
And you never know. It's one of the all-time hottest scenes, and it didn't even, I mean, he might have gotten it up for a few seconds, you know, but it just didn't matter. They both had a great time. And that's what I mean. It's so funny you say that.
It is, and she's also in another, there's another scene with her that I think is, if someone came to me and said, put me together a reel of Candida's best work for a time capsule, and I'd say, I have two scenes that I would put on that reel, and they are from the second disc, disc two of Revelations.
Yes.
Those are my two favorite scenes.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that because now that was another scene that was from Revelations, and it's such an interesting story because that was my eighth movie. And I got kind of confused and lost in the middle of making that movie. There was, you know, as you know, it was kind of, it's sort of a futuristic piece about a society that's creativity, sexuality are repressed and suppressed. And I shot it on 35mm. It was really an adventure. And I shot that scene with Chelsea in it originally, and then along with the other one with Rick Savage and this other woman. And they were beautiful scenes, but I sort of felt like all of a sudden like they didn't fit with the story. So then a year later, I raised more money and I shot three more scenes actually, and I put those in. And I left out those other two. And I came to sort of regret it. I thought, oh, you know, there was so much more filmic. They were much more beautifully shot in a way. Well, although I liked the other scenes, too. But and I didn't know what to do with them. And those are the days of video. What do you do with two extra scenes? So finally, when we transferred it to DVD, we added that behind-the-scenes documentary. We had all this footage. And I was able to add those two additional scenes. And it was so great because I have to tell you that there were about three people from, you know, just at different times.
I think that I, what it is I used a little clip from that scene with Chelsea, and I put it into another scene in My Surrender, just as someone was watching something on screen. Gina Fine is a filmmaker. She's watching a piece on screen that she supposedly shot. And I used that little teeny few, like a minute of Chelsea and that guy, and I started getting requests for, where is that scene? Where can I see it? Just from that little snippet.
Yes.
And so I'm really glad to hear you say that, because that was a really fun scene. And we shot that in that famous artist loft, whose name I can't remember. I'm so bad with names.
I think, you know, the reason why I love those two scenes so much is because if you watch those two scenes and you watch them objectively, that, to me, that puts a nail in the coffin to the idea that you cannot shoot hot scenes. Because I used to remember when you first started FEM, there was a notorious comment made by the late Jim Holliday, who was the dean of the adult critics. He said something to the effect of, sensitivity is wonderful, but it's not arousing.
Right, right.
That's the infamous quote. And if you look at those two scenes, and if you can't get hot from watching that, you got a problem in my mind.
Well, you know, that's so funny, because I never heard that quote after all this time.
Oh, that was in Time Magazine.
You're kidding.
Yeah,
oh
when it was discussing you in Time Magazine, and that quote was, that was like front and center. That was like the infamous Jim Holliday's quote.
That is, you know, well, gee, I would hate to have been his lover in real life. Jeez. Sensitivity isn't arousing. Okay. Yes, I had a lot of naysayers from the L.A. Critics out there when I first came out with my line. Jared Rutter was the only one who was really behind my work at that time. And,
Bob Rimmer, too, also.
Yes, oh, yes, Bob Rimmer was a wonderful supporter. But he was in Massachusetts. I mean, those guys were this whole little clique out in L.A., and I think they were, they called my work the Muzak of porn, you know, that sort of thing. So, but that's okay. You know, they were renegades. They really had a stake in keeping the whole porn genre as a kind of, like a renegade industry. And they didn't like that I was coming along and making movies that your nice housewife and girlfriend might actually like to look at. They liked being rebels.
Yes, that's, you know, there's a great DVD out called Pornography, The Secret History of Western Civilization. It goes all the way back to Pompeii to modern times. Came out in 1999. And actually, in the clip section, they interview Marilyn Chambers, John Leslie, Ron Sullivan, and Alex Dorenzi. And there's a scene with Alex Dorenzi, and he says, you know, I don't know anything about softcore. I'm a dirty guy. I like doing dirty things. I get the juices going. You know, that's what I really like. And that's what these guys were. These guys were like renegades, buccaneers. You know, it was, I think it was, they said, you know, it's the only place that you can go where you can work, where you can kind of be an outlaw, but you don't have to kind of have to pay the price for it. Well,
you
pay
a
certain price, but, you know, it's that kind of like, you know, outlaw type of mentality. And I think, you know, guys like Jim Holliday kind of like personified that, you know, that that was their thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder why they would be, you know, threatened. Here's this woman, a former actress who's coming into the boys' club.
That's right.
Wants to change things.
Yeah, exactly.
Do something perhaps better than what they can do.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know, it was an outrage. How dare you? You know, it's turning this into a nice middle-class mainstream form of entertainment. That's not what we're about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just like, well, guess what? Times are changing, guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's when I got the idea for FEM, I'll go ahead and leap over this if it's okay with you. It had been a few years, and for me, what was going on is that I got out of the movies. I got out of movies because I didn't want to get stuck there. Just like I
right.
said, you don't want to end up stuck there. There's, you know, there has to be life on the other side of the camera.
Yes.
And you know, you can't, you know how it is. You hit 30 and you're over the hill in that industry. And it wasn't something I grew up wanting to do. I had a lot of
right.
things that I enjoyed and I wanted to go on and, you know. So I also was very paying a lot of attention to market trends. I was always very politically aware. I'd been a feminist in college, and I noticed that women, because of the feminist movement, women had received permission to explore their sexuality.
Yeah.
They were starting to get curious about movies, but there was nothing really out there made for them, and they certainly didn't want to go sit in these dark, kind of grimy theaters. But all of a sudden, with home video that came out, it was created in the early 80s, and cable TV, there was suddenly a safe place for them to take a peek and start looking. But there was nothing out there for them. And I sensed that a lot of men actually wanted to share this experience with their woman and not
yes.
just do it as a private jerk-off type of thing. So I started to get the idea that wouldn't it be interesting to explore this? I also, by the way, of course, a big part of it was that when I was in the movies, I really couldn't understand why there couldn't be any focus on the woman's pleasure. I mean,
yes.
it was just ridiculous. One of my most memorable experiences was the very last movie I ever did that I wrote and starred in. It was a beautiful movie called Blue Magic. And
yeah,
my
that's one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It's out now again.
Yes, I know. It's on DVD.
Yes.
And my ex-husband, Per Schwistet, produced it, and Larry Ravine shot and directed it, and Jack Wrangler was my co-star, and the late Jack Wrangler, he was wonderful,
yes.
and, of course, the very, very wonderful cast, Samantha Fox, Veronica Hart, Meryl Michaels,
yes.
and who was such a great comedic actress. They're all good friends of mine to this day. And so we did this, and the last scene, if you remember, is I play this witch who's been alive many hundreds of years and who has these lavish parties at my castle. And if you remember, it was this beautiful turn of the century, all original costuming and stuff, beautiful. And I saw these lavish orgies where I get their sexual energy, and that's what keeps me young. So in the scene, yeah, it's so silly, but it was fun. And in the
no,
scene,
no, I
the
think
end,
that's a great idea.
And
I
so
think you should do a Blue Magic too.
You're right. You're right. I really should because you know my husband was so silly. He lost the papers on it and lost all the rights.
Oh my God!
I know the guys distributing it. We don't even see anything from that. You know, it's really a shame. But that's another whole story. But in that final scene where she seduces Jack Wrangler, who's actually there as a detective to expose the truth behind what's going on, and she ends up hypnotizing him and seducing him. And I had said to the director, I think it's very important that she have an explosive orgasm, and I'm willing to try and do that on screen, and which is not an easy thing to do. And he said to me, oh, no, the men that watch these don't care about seeing the women come. And I was stunned. I was stunned. I never forgot that. And it was, you know, I took a lot of lessons with me to when I became a director. And one of them was show the woman's pleasure. You want the woman's
yes.
audience, show it. And how else are men, what a great teaching tool these movies could be if we just do them in a way that people can actually learn how to do things together, explore their fantasies together, get some ideas, and let men see how women want to be made love to.
Yes.
And you know, this was very important to me. And so
well,
I that's
viewer,
what
I
want saw.
To see that. I want to see that. I want to see as much reality as I can. I don't care about the
yeah.
guy. I want to see the woman come.
I know. I mean, come on. The days of men watching this so that they can see the guys shoot cum all over the woman's face. I mean, I know that there are still a lot of guys out there that like to see that. But you know what? I don't know most of those guys. I really
no.
don't. The men I know think it's stupid and boring and they would, if they're going to watch anything, they want it to be truly erotic, and they want
yeah.
to, you know, it turns them on to see a woman in the throes of passion and pleasure. That is,
absolutely.
That is, you know, in real life, that's essentially what usually turns a man on most about a woman, is seeing her lose herself and the pleasure that he can bring her. So why wouldn't he want to see that on screen?
I can understand the seeing the thrill of it, but at the same time, you know, that's not what I want to get off. If I want to look at that, then, you know, why not watch gay porn? I mean, that's not
right.
what I am. I'm there to see the woman. I want to see her.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I always was like, really, like, bummed out when I first started watching. Like, well, you're covering her up. What? You come on, let me see.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
am I paying my money for? You know?
Yeah.
That's why
that's
I only
right.
watched all girl stuff for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted my money's worth.
Exactly, exactly. So this was really something that I wanted to change. I saw a lot
yes.
of opportunity, and plus the, you know, the other piece of it was that when I did these movies, I figured, you know, they're on film, they'll end up in getting dust in some vault somewhere, and I can just move on with my life. And all of a sudden, with video and cable TV, Candida Royale wasn't going anywhere, and for
no.
me it was an opera. You know, it was like, uh-oh. And so for me, it was an opportunity to take the name that I had made for myself that was going to follow me everywhere, apparently, and go ahead and use it, take it back, but do it with something I truly believed in. And being always political at heart and coming from the creative entertainment and art industry, it was a perfect match for me to go ahead and segue from an actress in these movies into someone, a woman who was daring to step out and get behind the camera and do movies the way I wanted to see them.
Yes.
So it was a great adventure. It was a great adventure. And I had originally a woman partner named Lauren Neamey who turned
yes.
up in my life. And it was really both our shared vision. My ex-husband, Per Schuersted, really was my producer for a while, and then we worked together a lot, and his family financed, they were very successful Swedish producers and distributors of mainstream, and also the financiers of some of the bigger movies like Roommates and Games Women Play.
Yeah.
And they financed the whole Fem line for like the first 8 movies. So it was
Roommates
really
is another
exciting.
Film that was you would think that was going to be the one that was going to kind of break and create a kind of like different genre, but not quite.
Well, you know, Chuck Vincent had a great talent for mm-hmm. making movies as well. But I don't think that I think that when it came to the erotic scenes, they weren't always erotic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that he got great, really some of the best women to work for him, like Samantha Fox, Veronica Hart,
yes.
Kelly Nichols. But the sex scenes weren't necessarily the hottest. They
right.
were shot well, but I still think that someone like Radley Metzger
yes.
exceeded more in terms of what was really sexy, what was really erotic.
Yes.
They were
yes,
definitely...
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was more story oriented.
Yes.
Chuck. He was that yeah. was definitely more his thing. But I still think that, you know, he did, you know, he accomplished some really good films, and he, you know, he has a good legacy left behind.
Yeah.
He also made one that was
oh,
a
yeah.
really good movie with Veronica Hart, a non porno called Deranged.
Oh, really?
That she was in there, and also Jamie Gillis was in it it was a non-porno movie. It was a regular, it was a horror film, and I thought it was very well done.
He was a good filmmaker, and he did a lot of non-explicit movies for Playboy
yes.
when cable TV was first coming around, and he did some really good stuff with people. He did.
He became sort of like the king of cable for a while. He
yes,
did that.
He did.
A lot of those. Well, I got to say, you know, I did work for him one day.
You did? You worked for him one day?
I worked for him one day. I worked for him. I was at a video dealers convention back in the winter of 1988, and Tracy Adams was there signing autographs. And I started talking to her, and I said, I'm trying to be an actor. And she said, well, you know, I'm working in New York now. I'm making movies for Chuck Vincent. I said, okay. She said, oh, I'm making R-rated films. I said, oh. She said, you want a job? I said, yeah, sure. She said, well, call up and tell him. She gave me her real name. She said, tell him this name, this person sent you. And I called up and they said, yeah, come on down. You know, and, you know, I was, and I worked one day with Jane Hamilton and
wow.
a woman named, oh, God, I know her real name. I don't want to say her real name, but
Crystal
Lane.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, she was the
oh,
star.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so how did that go?
It was fun. You know, it was like they said, dress like you're going to an elegant party. So I rented a tuxedo. I'm on the set there. And there's all these beautiful girls half naked, and it turns out to be like an orgy, but it's a comic orgy. And I said, oh, this looks like it's going to be fun. And then he sees me, goes, you, I said, yes, sir, I want you to pick up your jacket and hold it across your face. I said, you mean like this, like Bela Lugosi? He goes, yeah, I want you to stalk around the room. I said, great. All those guys are getting the chase after the girls, and I'm stalking around like Bela Lugosi. You know?
And covering your face.
Story my, about my life.
Oh, no. That's so funny. That's so funny. Well, I actually did a really fun movie. In fact, it was the way that I sort of ended up with my husband, which was really a great love affair for me. I mean, I met my ex-husband Pear by Leslie Beauvais. I had been flown in to finish a movie. I had started to shoot with her in New York. I was flown in to finish it. It was called Champagne for Breakfast.
Yes.
Leslie and I had a very sexy scene together, and she
yes.
was starring in the movie. And they flew me. I mean, this is the kind of movies productions back then. They actually flew me back out to finish the movie. I was living in L.A. at the time. And she brought me to meet Chuck Vincent. She said, oh, you got to meet Chuck. He does good work. Let me bring you over to meet him. Well, Chuck and I didn't necessarily click the way he did with some of the other actresses. But I met Pear at the interview, who didn't take his eyes off me. And when I was brought back to finish the movie, someone said, you know, Pear is shooting a movie. He's producing a movie for Chuck Vincent. Why don't you call him? And I did, and it was a movie called Sizzle, which I think is still to this day one of the funniest movies. And you know, Chuck wasn't really on the set so much, but it still had his touch, and it was so funny. There's one scene in it with Merle Michaels and Ron Jeremy that is, she was like the Judy Holliday of porn.
Yeah.
She was so talented. You know, she improvised all her lines. And this was just a hysterical, hysterical scene they did together. And it was such a fun movie called Sizzle. And I ended up, you know, Pear and I ended up together after that. That's how we ended up together. But that was one of Chuck's movies that really went on to be a lot of fun. I had a horrible scene in it. You know, I got stuck working with someone I didn't particularly like, and I think that I still carried it off. You know, they always liked me because I was professional and I could really memorize and deliver my lines well.
Yeah.
And so I had this long scene where I'm sitting by the fire drinking wine with this guy, and we have this whole dialogue we have to go through, and then we make love, you know. And I'll tell you, the wine is what got me through that scene. I always say, you know, you're there not to so much to have, if you can have fun and really enjoy the scene, all the better. It'll come across really great. But you're not getting paid to have fun. You're getting paid to look like you're having fun.
Yes. That was, I think that was one of Ron's first movies, the first starring films.
Yes.
When he
was
that.
Very young. That's right. And Fascination. I did Fascination for Chuck, and that was starring Ron Jeremy, and I played his sister in it, which was another hysterical movie.
That was, he later remade that movie.
I know, into a cable version, a straight cable version, that's right. That's
yeah, he did a complete remake of it with, let's see who was in it. Veronica was also in it. So was who else? Oh, there was a guy in there who he was sort of like in the mid 70s. He was sort of like the replacement for Harry Reams.
Jack, I can't think of who that might have been.
Jeff Eagle.
Huh. All right. Don't remember him.
He did. He had the same kind of big mustache. And he was in one of Cecil Howard's really good movies where he played the protagonist, and there's this whole scene where he's talking to his buddy, and they're playing handball. And actually, the buddy is Cecil Howard, a very young Cecil Howard.
Oh, funny. Yeah, yeah.
And they're talking about this one girl who he loves so much, and at the end he says, I never knew her real name. And the guy's wife comes up and goes, I want you to meet my wife, Janice. And it's the girl, his old girlfriend. And it was like, wow, it was such a great, I think it was called Peaches or something. The thing about, what I love about these films is that, you know, you got to shift through a lot of them, but you can find some really good moments.
Yes, yeah.
There are some really good films, and that I think are just as good as, you know, anything that Hollywood turned out, or, you know, you have to look for it. But there is stuff there, and there's stuff that you can mind.
Yeah, there are gems. If you turn over enough rocks, you find the gems. And again, people just, it was a lot smaller, tinier industry. There were about 100 releases a year, as opposed to about 13,000 releases a year now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, people were individuals. The filmmakers were individuals. You could really, there was personality. There was real unique personality. And I don't mean to be some old fogey saying, oh, those were the days. But, you know, it's a different industry now. And I'm sorry we didn't get to talk more about what's going on these days. But
no, we can talk about that.
Okay, we still have time?
Yeah, we still have time. How much time do I have left?